Prologue. It had been a nuisance to be called back to London. I frequently had to remind myself that my publishers were paying my bills and could call the tune. It was something I was still finding very hard to get used to, even though it was nearly 2 years now since I had signed their contract. I sighed as I looked out of the window of the plane. More than 2 years since my tycoon father had lost it all and disappeared into the blue. My trust fund had disintegrated into shreds of valueless paper, my Porsche towed away, my father's house in Kensington repossessed. At least that is what I think they called it. Repossessed. Such a strange word. It would have interested me at one time when I wrote poetry and did little else. I could have spent a happy day or more just repeating the sibilant sound. But no, the day I first heard that word, it had a decidedly nasty ring to it, and I shot off to Heathrow and boarded the first plane to Nice. Of course, my father's lawyers had soon caught up with me. An early morning phone call interrupting my delightful breakfast of croissant and coffee under my favourite olive tree. The lawyer spoke for half an hour or so, and I had found it difficult to maintain interest after the first few minutes when he had spelt out my state of poverty. But, as lawyers love to do, he repeated the facts in as many different ways that he could devise. I had finished the last flaky crumb of croissant by the time he came out with the next few head-banging facts. My ex-tycoon father had disappeared without trace. Possibly this should have been even more disturbing than the news of my new poverty, but, well, I was rather accustomed to not seeing much of my father. He had always been one of those super good providers, but, it has to be said, very hands-off. So, yes, it had been bad news to hear that my flat in Holland Park also had to be sold. The lawyer followed this with what he thought was the good news. Oh my, how he spun it out in legalese. Yes, the Holland Park property was in my name alone, so I could reap the benefit of the sale. I know most people would be able to get by very nicely on that for some years, but frankly, it wasn't really enough to keep my Mer de Provence immaculately restored, four beds, olive grove, infinity pool, etc., and lots more etc.s, in the state to which it was accustomed. Fortunately, my Provençal farmhouse was also mine to keep, and my second open-top French reg Porsche had also slipped through the net of debt. I know it all sounds fine, but everything in life is relative. Relative in a different sense than the daughter-daddy thing. It was all just too awful and sort of boring at the same time, having been used to a totally spoilt and ridiculously rich life. How could I, at the age of 23, even begin to cope? No money, no plastic cards, no Coots and Co. holes in the wall, no department store accounts. Just how did that work? I felt I had been repossessed. And by the devil incarnate, what does the spoilt little rich girl do when she can't have what she wants? Sulk, of course. Mope and weep. A few hot tears of self-pity. Quite a lot of tears, actually. Then, one morning bright and early, probably about 11 a.m, it had suddenly occurred to me I could do what I suddenly realised other people do to make money. I could get a job. So now, here I am, flying down once more into Nice to be met by my chauffeur. Well, it just doesn't do to let standards drop too far. Annoying to most people who knew me, I had landed into a great job, maybe even a career. Of course, I had pulled every string attached to my father's address book to land the work. I had soon discovered his spectacular financial crash had shocked the people in his world, but some, no, a few still believed in him.